Hello, listeners. Welcome to the next session.
An advice podcast for game masters seeking help with their next game session. I'm Adam Johns.
And I'm Alyssa Johns.
And we're here to talk. You're in your earbuds.
In your earbuds. Hey, sorry for the lack of episodes this last month.
No.
I have been living through pneumonia, we think. Bronchitis?
Or something.
RSV? Something has been
affecting
me.
I call it the cough-pocalypse.
Cough-pocalypse yeah. has been infecting my throat for going over 8 weeks now.
Yeah. Has it really been 8 weeks?
Yeah, it has.
Feels like so much longer.
To you, think about what it feels like to me.
I'm sure.
Anyway, I was getting really tired of editing coughs out, so took a break. But I'm still coughing. We just finally decided we needed to
record an episode anyway.
We just need to get an episode out. So here we are.
So glad to be back.
So glad to be back. In our absence, we had a fantastic question from our good friend Diet Toothpaste.
Hey, Diet Toothpaste. Always like getting questions from Diet Toothpaste.
How you been? Diet Toothpaste is in possession of some of the only merch that we made that we haven't put in a store yet.
Yeah, there is actually, like, presumably someday going to be a merch store for all you listeners who are like, I desperately need some next session podcast merch. That may actually happen someday.
Where can I get this awesome mouse pad?
This podcast that I listen to, if only there were ways that I could have that visually represented, tactilely, even within my life.
Yeah, you know, that Stanley water cup that went like super viral, that's nothing in compared to how rare the next session podcast
water bottle is. Yeah. Anyway,
that only, like, we don't even have it.
Only Diet Toothpaste has it.
We gotta hunt him down.
Yeah.
Go get it.
It's an artifact fetch quest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Diet Toothpaste says, hi, longtime listener, multiple time caller. And while I've definitely listened to every episode, I can't guarantee I remember the information in all of them. So apologies if this is something you've already given a lot of advice on. But how do I run a good session zero? I have a group of friends who don't have any experience with D&D, but have shown interest in playing, and I would love to get them hooked on it. Up until now, everyone I've played with has come in with a fairly solid understanding of the game, but this would be the first time I'll be teaching people who may be familiar with the broadest of strokes, but not with the mechanical or nitty-gritty side of things. I want to get people excited to play, and for them to make engaging characters, but I want to make sure I don't forget any important facets of the game or overwhelm them with too much info too fast. Basically, what's the best way to introduce people to the game? How start game good?
Whoa, this is such an interesting question.
How start game good?
How start game good? Again, there's so many parts to this that I could break down.
That's why this is the episode.
This is the whole episode.
This is it.
That's great.
We have this question. And then we have a maybe a thing at the end.
Okay, let's start with how do you introduce the game to new players, which I actually feel like is a completely different topic than specifically session zero. So let's break those apart real quick. Session zero is usually a term that's utilized as this is a first game session, but that we're going to use that time and we're not actually going to be playing the game, and instead we're going to be talking about what kind of game we want to have, potentially making characters.
Yeah, get setting, ready for the game.
Right. We kind of use that space to get ready for the game.
Just and people, the pre-game.
And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but functionally people use session zero as a way to set everybody's expectation and to build excitement for the game is absolutely a big part of what a session zero is really intended to be. A lot of the times, it's a perfect opportunity for everybody to kind of sit down and write their character sheets and roll their stats and also to set down safety measures like X cards and things like that. And sometimes to define the very boundaries of the world. What kind of a world are we going to play? People also use session zero as a way to define the actual picking the RPG. Like, you may not even have a specific RPG in mind. You use the session zero as a place to, like, sit down and be like, here are the RPGs we have books for. Which one do you want to play? So it can be a wide variety of things, but almost always it's used as a term to specifically designate we're not playing the game yet. We are building the pieces necessary to then go play the game. That brings up a really interesting distinction because my belief is whenever I have brand new players who have never played an RPG before, that they should not play a session zero.
What? Whoa. What?
Yeah. So this is actually going to go against some conventional wisdom that has existed in the RPG community for a long time, especially more recently, where there's a strong emphasis on the idea of how important it is to set really, really good safety measures, really, really good boundaries, to introduce everybody into all of these pieces of the game. And some of those things I firmly believe are absolutely true. However, one flaw that exists in the experience of playing RPGs is that most people who've never played a tabletop role-playing game before don't know what it looks like. And this is an interesting problem, because if you were to say to somebody, hey, come over and play some video games with me on the couch, they would generally have an idea of what that looks like. I'm going to hold a controller. I'm going to be looking at a TV screen. We're going to be playing some kind of a game. I'm going to be pushing buttons. And the same thing is true for, like, oh, we want to sit down and we want to play some board games. You might only have ever been exposed to Monopoly or Candyland. And what I might be talking about is much more modern, you know, streamlined Euro games, whatever the case may be. I might have a very different concept of what kind of board games we're actually going to be sitting down to play. But we all still kind of get the idea that we're going to be like rolling dice or having cards or have a thing in front of us, and that it's going to last a certain amount of time and then it's going to be over and someone's going to be declared a winner or something along those lines. There is still a shared understanding of what that means. If I talk to somebody who just has never played, never seen, never heard of what a D&D game is, what a tabletop RPG game is, and I said, I want you to come over and play some D&D with me, they might be totally enthusiastic and ready to jump into new experiences and still have no idea what that actually means.
Mm-hmm.
When I hand them a character sheet and say, you're going to be playing this kind of character, what do you want your strength to be? They will have no concept of what the meaning is behind that idea. They might know what all those words individually mean, but they don't know what that means as far as their engagement in the game.
I could also see that if you are setting up a session zero with people who have no idea what's going to happen in this game, no idea any of it, and then you're like, okay, we're going to have this X card to make it so that you are, like, we don't go too far. They might be, like, completely put off by this idea. Like,
right. What
do you mean go too far? Like, what do you, like, you know, we're not going to have any sex in the game. We're not going to have any guns. And to be like, is that good? Is that bad? Right. I don't know.
I have no concept for what the meaning is behind these things, because I just don't know what this game that we're about to play is supposed to be.
So do you suggest having a pre-game session and then a session zero and then a actual campaign?
Yes, that is exactly what I suggest.
What would you call that pregame session?
I would actually call that session one. Now, the reason, and then obviously, like, the numbers part of this doesn't make any sense.
No, you should call it session prequel.
Session prequel or session negative
session,
one. Or
session before.
Session 0.5.
Yeah, session 0.2.
Yeah.
Just to be even sillier.
So my basic concept and when we were designing groups at Wheelhouse Workshop and Game to Grow, we followed by a lot of these same tenets, is that I want to show people what the play of the game looks like before we get into the nitty-gritty of then deciding the specific rules and specific, you know, boundaries and what kinds of weapons or armor you want to wear and what kind of world we want to be in and what kinds of safety measures we want to have. I have to at least show them what kind of game this is actually supposed to be. And after many years of practicing this, I will tell you that I have more or less failed to explain the game to somebody in a way where I feel like they actually know what that means in words without playing the game.
Mm.
And so, you know, as much as I may say, like, this is a collaborative role-playing story game of chance. It's a game where you use dice to help you tell a story, where you play a single individual character in a world that is completely described and without screens.
Using pens and paper.
And none of that means anything. If you play TTRPGs, you're like, yeah, that's all that is accurate. those are all the things that we're doing. If you don't play TTRPGs, that has no meaning to you whatsoever. And you're like, are we, so we're making up a story or something? And I'm like, yes, we are. But there are rules to how you can make up that story.
And you can't make up the story. I make up the story.
I make up the story. And then I tell you what you're doing in the story. And then you decide what you're doing in that story. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. The reality is it's it is a shared common language. If you have some exposure to this, all of a sudden, if I say, let's go play some TTRPGs, you're like, cool, I can picture a lot of ways that that looks. I'm ready to jump in and play it. And if I hand you a session zero on a game you've never, never, ever, ever played before, that you would still be able to jump in and be like, all right, I kind of get what the pieces are of this. So once you establish that shared understanding of what this actually looks like, now we can have a discussion about why it might be important to have an X card. So
how do you do that?
So the very first thing that I like to have in the first session, not the session zero,
point two session,
is I give players always a pre-made character. They need to have a character sheet that describes something like their stats, their equipment, their maybe spells or abilities, their skills, all of those things that needs to be more or less filled out all the way for them.
Except maybe their name.
I want to give them a taste of what it is to have the autonomy in the game that the rules and boundaries of the game regularly provide them. In other words, they get to decide their character's name, but they don't get to decide, I want my character to be a farmer, right? That's not one of the options, because the very presumption of the game is that you're an adventurer. You could be also a farmer. You could say, I have a background as a farmer and I have now become an adventurer. There are all sorts of ways that I can incorporate that into my story. But I have to give the boundaries to the player so that they know what the setup is. They know what the premise is of the game. So what I say to players is I give them a selection of character sheets, all pre-made, and say, here you go, select one of these character sheets, and I can talk about each of these. I can give like a one sentence breakdown. You're a druid, you're in tune with nature, and you can turn into magical beasts. You can shapeshift yourself into magical beasts. You're a wizard, you grab magic and output it through your knowledge and direct study of magic. You're a fighter and you have studied the way of the sword and shield and can protect yourself and your allies. Whatever it is, I can give a really kind of one sentence basic mm-hmm. description. I'm not going to describe what your stats are. I'm not going to describe what your attribute array or your skills specifically are, or your abilities, not unless the player asks, like, what kind of abilities does this one have? That's great. That's a great question. Let's talk about that. I want to give you is the entry point into understanding what each of these things are.
This reminds me of when we did a D&D session with your cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you didn't have the pre-made characters, but you did just this. You gave them, like, you can choose between this, 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 and this. And then your cousin wanted to do, I want my character to have a pet squid that I keep in my backpack. And you could, like, the things you get to say yes to make it even more fun for that entry point.
Right. One of the really powerful aspects of this is the ability to know what kinds of rules you're willing to bend and what kinds of rules you're willing not to, in order to make it a fun, playful experience for your players. So as a game master, when you're introducing this concept to players, some players will respond to it by saying, okay, I guess I get to pick one of these, I'll pick this one. And then they'll look at their character sheet and they'll decide what they're going to do based on what's being written there. And you'll get other players who hear what's being presented to them and want to go off in a wild direction. And they go, can I play like some kind of like fire dog? And you can say, you can decide, like, do you want to have the sort of openness of the role-playing experience and welcoming them into the playfulness of creativity, where you can say, like, sure, yeah, you can be a fire dog. That sounds great. Do you want to be a fire dog fighter or a fire dog wizard? And you can kind of help them know where the boundaries are of what that choice means. Or you can say, it's not really like a fire dog, but there is, you can be kind of like a fire person, like a genasi, which is like an elemental, and then you can provide them with the boundary of how close they can get to the creativity that they want to have.
I want to be a firefighter fighting dog.
Oh, so like you want to be like Marshall from the Paw Patrol.
No. I want to be a firefighter who fights dogs.
Oh, who fights dogs?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds to me like kind of a fighter who's not afraid to jump into the fire.
And it's not a firefighter dog fighter.
No.
But a firefighter fighter dog.
Right. who fights specifically dogs. Are they like demon dogs or something? Are they?
We'll see.
Okay. All right. We're gonna find out. Okay, that could be, or you could be, and then, so my ability as a game master is I know all the boundaries of the rules, and I can present to you, you can be a fighter, or you can be a ranger with a favorite enemy of dogs, and then I can present these options to you so that now you know what those choices that you're making mean. And you can start them from the perspective of what are the boundaries of the game, or you can start them from the perspective of what is my creativity then translate to in the game. And both those are perfectly fine.
When you set this up, how often do people in the session zero, after the session point two, then want to keep their characters?
Often. To be honest, I'm of the opinion that most of the time, the actual mechanics of your character matter very, very little. As to your enjoyment of that character. The things that matter to you about your characters almost always are about the personality that you have imagined for that character. And if we can provide the opportunity for you to establish that personality early on, that even if that wasn't what you would have picked otherwise, like maybe you're the kind of person who like normally would have played a wizard, but that wasn't one of the choices, or for some reason the way I presented it made barbarian seem much more appealing to you. Now you already have an image for what your cool barbarian character is like, and now you become attached to it, which is great. That's perfect. That's exactly what I want for you. And ultimately, if you do decide, you know what, I don't like this barbarian, I'm not a fan of the way this works, I wanted to play something with a little bit more magic to it, I always provide the open opportunity for that as well. Now that you know what the game looks like, if you want to change to a different character, you want to roll up your own character, you want to customize it, you're like, I like the barbarian, but I want to go with something wild, like wild magic barbarian, then I can go, great. After that session, point two, you're able to make that shift in whatever direction you want as a part of that session zero, or frankly, I as a game master am fine with you making that shift at any point in the game. I'm always happy to help you facilitate playing the character you want to play. So we start off that session point two. I present you with a pre-made character. We do a couple of real basic questions. What is your character named? Why is your character now an adventurer? I also like to ask questions like, is your character from a big city or a small town? Or what kind of family does your character have? But those two first questions, your character's name and why are you now an adventurer, are the most important pieces, because they establish the very idea of what it is that you're now doing. You're playing a character and you get to decide who that character is. And the very premise is you are an adventurer. That's what the premise is of the game. This is also a place where I can set the premise of the game if I want to put more boundaries on it. Like, the very idea of this game is that you are a good guy. You're a hero helping to save the world. And not all D&D games are set up that way. Sometimes you play the bad guys. Sometimes you play, you know, rogues out for your own interest or whatever the case may be. But this is the place when I'm presenting these characters to you that I get to set up the expectation of what that is. So I define that. And then I offer it to you. Why? Why are you here? We're all rogues in a guild of rogues. That's the premise of the game that we're trying to play today. Why did you become a rogue? And so then you offer it back to the player again, that they get to create the story of their character, which is also an important aspect of presenting and introducing them to that game. The next steps are all just classic tropes. I want to give the players in that point two session, I want to give them a clear idea of what each of the what are often called sort of the three pillars of Dungeons and Dragons, what each of those things are. So I want to give them an idea of what combat looks like. I want to give them an idea of what roleplay looks like. Get them, if possible, to talk as their character, and I want to give them an idea of what exploration looks like, being able to like solve a puzzle or tackle a, you know, environmental challenge, jump over a cliff or you know, the bridge is collapsing, what do you do? So provide opportunities for each of those three things. That has to happen, ideally that happens all in that first point two session. And throughout that experience, because I know that the very premise that I have offered, which is that you don't do a session zero, and therefore we have not talked about safety measures, We have not talked about, you know, boundaries. I am keeping an acute eye and awareness of making sure that everybody feels safe, everybody feels heard, everybody feels like they are having a good time and a fun time coming and playing at this table and being playful together, because we have not given anybody any tools for handling any of that yet. And so I have to take care as a game master to create that space, knowing that my players don't yet have easy access to tools to define that.
When you are coming up with this three pillars type little mini session, mm-hmm. Do you ever use the same session over and over again? Like, I know that you have the Seamus one, but there's a couple of really good like homebrew ones online that I found that I've always wanted to try, the Wild Sheep Chase.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Things like that other people have come up with that might be smaller than a one shot, almost like a half shot.
Yeah.
Half shot.
I mean, even within, you know, the one shot definition, I feel like fits pretty well if you've got a decent play session to play through. I think those are great ideas. I'm a fan of the Seamus plotline, which is you can find it in the Critical Core materials, is one that I have famously used many, many, many times now to introduce people to the game, mostly because I like the tropes. You meet in a tavern, and I know that, like, people listening to this podcast are like, ah, tavern meeting, like,
roll my eyes,
it's so ridiculous. But remember that the people that I'm introducing the game to don't know any of the tropes yet. So a tavern meeting isn't an overdone, you know, ridiculous, I've done this too many times, and it's so over the top yet. They're getting just the very first exposure to that trip.
They're the lucky 10,000 for the day.
Exactly. And I like to play up those opportunities to introduce them into the culture of the world, not just what it is to play a TTRPG, but now they know what a tavern meet is because they played that one session together. And the same thing is true for, like, I make sure that they are attacked by skeletons, because no one ever has any qualms destroying undead as a function. There's no moral conundrum in most cases. Very rarely do I come across people who
these should not be alive. Go get them.
Right, exactly. The same way that like, you know, robots or constructs or something like that are also, like, a fantastic bad guy to fight against. Because sometimes I'll put in, like, here's some giant spiders who are trying to kill you, and then you'll get some players who are like, I don't want to kill living things.
And then as soon as you slice into them, they bleed blue blood, and you can see the mechanisms on the inside.
And now they're giant robots.
It's very, very Samurai Jack is what that is.
But it eliminates the moral question of that. And so, like, all of these are, you know, all these pieces I set up with intention in that first session to make the game as accessible as possible to people to feel like they get to be playful and creative. And that is a huge part of it. They should be playful, they should be creative, and they should learn that they're making a story, that their input matters, and it changes bits and pieces of how that story comes together. They get to describe how their character jumps over those tables, and I want them to get into the habit and to get into the very idea that they are in control of their character in this world and getting to make choices that allow them to feel like an adventurer, to feel like it's an action-packed, wonderful storytelling experience that we're jumping into together.
You know, I was going to name this episode Session Zero and the thing later, and now I'm thinking I'm going to rename it Session Point Two is Greater Than Zero.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've established most of the pieces of Session Point Two. So the only things that I'll leave on the table is... you can wrap up the story of session point two, but you don't have to. You can leave it open-ended, and that can just be the start of your campaign. So if you like have a campaign in mind, you want to run Curse of Strahd or something like that, if you can find a place to introduce the three pillars to provide all of these opportunities for those players, you can hand them some pre-made characters, you can get them in, you can get them playing the first parts of it, and you can leave the end of that session, like, great, you defeated those skeletons and jumped across the bridge and chatted with each other. Now you're off to go defeat Strahd. And leave that an open-ended cliffhanger with the understanding that, like, that's exactly where you're coming back once you're jumping into your actual campaign. So the session point two doesn't have to be this kind of standalone meaningless one shot that doesn't work into your campaign. It can absolutely be the start of your main plot that you want to play, that you're excited to jump into as a game master. It's just a matter of how you're presenting it to the players. That's the really important part.
Is this essentially what the red box does?
I think so. I think that there's like the Phandalin plotline or whatever is intended to sort of open things up to the greater world of now you can go off on an adventure. I think it's mostly supposed to be sort of self-contained. Like, there isn't a specific adventure that, like, at the end of that red box, it's like, now you should go on to this other adventure. You haven't been given, like, a specific...
Here's the blue box.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, I think that is the intent behind that kind of setup, the red box idea. And Critical Core is actually designed in very much the same way. All the character sheets are pre-made. You kind of hand them off to people, and then they're ready to go. They're ready to start jumping in and playing the game, and you can run them through. Of course, Seamus is the opener of Little Town of Tusk, which is the longer module first module of Critical Core. So yes, I don't think this philosophy and this approach is entirely unique to me. I think a lot of people use the same approach about getting people into the game. But that does bring us back to session zero.
And right now we're going to take a break. And we're back.
Hey, we're back.
Hey, we're back. Hey, let's talk about session zero.
Let's finally get around to talking about session zero.
All right.
Okay. Now, the very assumption is that the players that you now have entering into your session zero now have at least some idea of what the game looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's worthwhile to point out that if they already had an idea of what the game looks like, if they already know, if they've already experienced TTRPGs, or even if they've just, like, watched, you know, a whole bunch of like TTRPGs YouTube shows or listen to some podcasts, that may be enough to just start with session zero, and you don't need to have necessarily the session point two. You're really kind of deciding based on what level of experience do your players have. But you're now ready for session zero. Let's talk about the stuff that you should have in your session zero.
Yes, I was going to say there's a bunch of different ideas online. And there's a bunch of people who have come out with, like, checklists and stuff. There's all sorts of different resources you can pick and choose from. But I am interested to know what Adam's is.
So I definitely have my own sort of mental checklist that I have created of what I want to outline when I do something like a session zero. So the first one is, there's a question of whether or not we're going to do character creation in a session zero. Oh, wait. Actually, let me back up. The first question that you should be asking is my session zero going to be an entire game session, or is it going to be a part of a game session? And it's a worthwhile question to ask because there is a logistics that comes into play when you're going to play D&D. You're going to play any TTRPG. If you're going to meet, say, every week with this same group of people, and they're carving out time in their week in order to get together and come and play a game, they may want to actually play something on that first session. So even though you may be outlining, hey, we're going to have a session zero, we're all going to sit down, we're all going to make some characters, we're going to define some parts, we're going to put in some safety tools, whatever the case may be, there is an important question in there, which is, are we expecting to actually play a game at the end of doing all this stuff? Or are we expecting that we're going to hang out on a call or hang out in person for 2 hours and never actually play anything, and we're just going to talk about the idea of playing something? And that is a very important expectation for you to set up as the game master when you introduce the idea of the session zero. So you should be clear with your players, hey, all this is we're going to make some characters, we're going to define the rules of the game, and we're going to define some safety tools. That's all we're doing. That's going to take us 2 hours because making characters is really complicated, and defining the rules, defining the boundaries and the kind of game we want to play, I have a lot of things that I want to do to help us define that. So it is totally possible for you to fill a 2-hour session with just all that cool session zero stuff. And if you have players who are excited to jump in and do that, who are excited to like make meaningful impacts onto the kind of world that you want to play on, awesome. then you can all jump in together, and that can be the first thing that is just all about hype. It's all about building up excitement for the game that you're going to be playing every single week for a long time, right? Or you say, we're going to take half an hour or an hour, we're going to make some characters, we're going to define some things, and then we're going to jump in and start playing.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you need to be prepared as a game master to have some of that early stuff, whatever that, you know, you don't know what characters people are going to make or what world you're going to define, so you got to have some loosely available opportunity to jump into whatever the early parts of the campaign
maybe are. Maybe a tavern meet. Who knows?
Maybe that's your 0.2 session stuff that you're throwing in there.
You could also put potentially, I mean, this wouldn't be part of the session zero, but you guys could talk about, like, do we want to go harder into the world creation and do something like a quiet year first?
Yes, absolutely. So for those who may not know, Quiet Year is actually a TTRPG as well that has a lot of really great world creation stuff and is a pretty fun way to actually create the world. It has a bunch of rules and boundaries and questions to help you create a world that exists within a like a fantasy sort of setting. So there's a lot of opportunity there to bit more or less play a game that then creates the world that is then the game, the different game that you're then going to play.
Because as you're creating that world, more characters and stuff are coming out from it, which is pretty interesting. Taz did it. The Adventure Zone did it in their Etherseed campaign.
Mm-hmm. And it can be a lot of fun to do. And that's not even the only way to do that.
Right.
There are tons of TTRPGs specifically designed around world creation. That if you go to DriveThruRPG and you just start looking through different kinds of games that really focus on this kind of concept, you can do quite a lot with it. There's another game that I absolutely love called Microscope that's all about sort of creating world stuff together and role playing out different aspects of that, and that can also be a wonderful way to basically create, you know, what kind of world do we exist in. And none of that even gets into the map creation itself, which you also have a ton of different tools to help you do. So there are a lot of ways to make those parts of the game a lot of fun and engagement with the players, giving them both the right amount of boundaries so that they feel like it's not just an open, you know, blank slate that they don't know what to do with, but also a really great engagement and an understanding of how to engage in that process.
So say my characters, they're all ready. They just want to do a session zero. We're not going to play.
Perfect.
What's next?
And we've made that clear to everybody.
Yes.
So we're jumping in. We're going to do a session zero. It's just going to be about creation. So the first step is character. Oh, man.
Oh,
this is the interesting question, right? I was about to say the first step is character creation. But is it? Boy, that's an interesting question. You have to decide for yourself as a game master and maybe conversation as the group to decide whether or not it's more important to create characters first and define world second, or to create world first and define character second. There are a lot of good reasons to do both. If you know what system you're going to be using, let's presume for the sake of this podcast that you're going to use D&D or Pathfinder or similar sort of fantasy-based role-playing.
Yeah, otherwise we don't have time.
Right. We could get into the weeds, certainly talking about like all the other kinds of role-playing games that you could be playing and some of them are GM-less. We could talk about Fiasco. We could talk about
blah blah blah.
But
too
so
much.
Let's just assume you're going to play some kind of fantasy-based role-playing adventure game where you are playing adventurers in a world, just for the sake of simplicity. The things that I want to include in a session zero are world creation, character creation, and safety tools and game expectations, sort of player expectations of the game. So for the moment, let's set aside world creation and character creation.
We'll come
back to those.
Those are kind of standard.
They are pretty standard. Let's talk about safety tools and let's talk about table expectations. When I define safety tools with my players, what I really want to do is I want to make sure that they're empowered to set their own boundaries. The purpose of all the safety tools is to be clear about where my comfort levels are with the kind of game that we may be playing and the kinds of topics that we may be exploring, and to empower my players to speak up as much as possible about when their boundaries are being crossed or when we're headed into a territory that they may not be comfortable with. That's the purpose of all safety tools that we create in the game. They are to give potentially voice or nonverbal cues to players so that they can set boundaries and say, this is too much. We're headed in a weird direction. I'm not comfortable with this. So that they feel like they have the opportunity to do so, because often as a player, you don't feel that way.
Like, for example, that we used earlier, I don't want to kill spiders, could be one of their things, which is living creatures. And that might not necessarily be something they want for their character. That might be something that they don't feel comfortable as a player.
Right. Now, sometimes you may know some of this information already ahead of time as a game master. And I want to really emphasize that when it comes to safety tools, your comfort as a game master is absolutely a very mm-hmm. important part of that. If you have a player who's like, I want to play with like torture and death and destruction and mayhem in my games at great levels of detail, and you as a game master are like, I'm not comfortable with any of that. I have to describe all of that. I have to create that world. It is absolutely okay, and I would say your responsibility as a game master, to set the boundaries for yourself so that you're not playing that kind of game, and that the expectation is clear to the players to say, I'm not going to roleplay those things.
And it might be good for you to define ahead of time
yeah.
as the example. You can say, for example, I don't want to play games that have sex scenes in them. I don't feel comfortable describing them. I don't like a lot of lust in my games. I would like to avoid those.
Right.
And then you can go, what about you?
And this is the perfect opportunity to introduce my three favorite tools for safety are the X card, which I'll describe in a second, the yes list, or the no list, and the please list, and the fade to black. And I like to establish these whenever I am going to do a session zero, or we'll talk about the possibility of doing games without session zeros, which is also something, if we have time to talk about
it, this.
But if I am going to do a session zero, which I don't always do, but I always do introduce these even when I don't have a session zero. So the please list, no list, and please list is exactly what you're talking about, which is the space of saying, first, what we're going to do is we're going to say, what are we not going to have in our games? And I will start that list off by saying sexual content. I'm not going to describe any sexual content. I don't want to have that in our games. I don't want to go into great depth about it.
Okay. And I would say, I don't want to have to worry about drugs. I really don't want to have my character focused on drug trafficking or any of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you may get, on that no list, you may get people setting boundaries for what kinds of story they want to see in the game. So common things that I see come up on the no list are torture, violence towards pets and animals, dating and stuff like that. Not just sexual content, but also like romantic relationships is sometimes things that make people really uncomfortable.
Sexual assault.
Like, I don't just not want to roleplay that. I don't want that content to exist in my world. Racism and discrimination is often one that comes up pretty often.
Slavery.
I don't want guns to exist in my world. Oftentimes people want to avoid things that are specifically, you know, are meaningful to them and maybe difficult for them to navigate on their own, in their own world, but also sometimes just poignant things that exist within the real world that I don't want to have in this world. I want to create a world that doesn't have those things and that as a result, you know, tackles other issues rather than those issues.
I've seen gore come up. Like, they don't mind that someone gets killed or faints or whatever, but they don't want it described. Like, don't excessive bleeding or any of that kind of stuff.
Right. One of the things that came up a lot during the pandemic was people didn't want disease.
Yeah.
They didn't want, you know, illnesses and stuff to be a major story point.
They were already dealing with that in their real lives.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's worthwhile, when I create a no list, I will do it based on the level of safety I already have with the group. If I have a group of total and complete strangers, I will have everybody fill out their no lists on 3x5 cards and turn them in anonymously. Mm-hmm. And then I will add those things to a board so that we can all see them and we all know what they are. That way you don't have to specifically call out like, hey, this thing makes me uncomfortable and I don't want people to associate me with this idea, but we can still make sure that we avoid it in our game. Now, if I have a group of people who I'm already friends with, who we already have a comfort with, I may be perfectly comfortable leaving those things to be discussion points, knowing that we're already a pretty safe group, and this is a good place for us to, we can talk about these things, or we can have that opportunity. Or sometimes I'll do both, and I'll say, here's an anonymous opportunity, let's put all those up. Is there anything that anybody felt like they forgot? And let's talk about those things now. The please list part of it is to say, what kinds of things are you excited to see about in our game? And that part I don't do anonymously. That part is just an opportunity for us to talk about what kinds of things I'm excited about. I'd really like there to be like a steampunky kind of feel to the world that we're doing.
I really want to have a pirate chase or swashbuckling or something like that.
Yeah, I really love like really epic moments. Like you know, it's almost like a slow down Zack Snyder Justice League kind of epic combat moments. I really want to have lots of those. So whatever the players, that gives the opportunity for them to, they're helping to shape that world. And that's, you know, leading into that, to that world creation side. But it's awesome to have that in the no and please list. So it doesn't always feel like, hey, this is a crazy burden of like, let's eliminate everything in the game. But it's also a statement of like, what kinds of things are you excited for so that I can help craft that experience as a game master? That's the no list, please list. The X card can be done a lot of different ways, and I totally encourage you to go and look up. There's resources that are online that you can look up instructions for an X card. But the basic concept of the X card is everybody has a 3x5 card in front of them, or there's one in the middle that you can flip over, and it's got a big black X or a big red X or whatever the color is that you want to do, and it says, this basically means I'm going to take a break or we're going to pause the game. And you establish what the rules are for the X card early on. So whatever rule set you want to use for whatever the X card looks like, it's basically a way of saying, I'm a little overwhelmed, but it's hard for me to say that in this moment. And so I'm flipping over my X card, and in the process of doing that, I recommend one of two things happen. One of them is the game is paused, which is a perfectly fine way to respond to that. We pause the game, everybody takes five. I, as the game master, have a conversation with the person who flipped over the X card to make sure that whatever it is that we're barreling towards or whatever it is that they're finding overwhelming, we can sit and have a conversation, make sure we're avoiding that or that they're well taken care of. The other possibility is that you can have the X card represent that player is going to sit out for a little while. So it doesn't have to pause the whole game necessarily. You can say, the purpose of our X card is you flip over the X card, your character stays safe. Nothing will happen to them. We'll come up with a reason for that, or that all the bad guys will just suddenly avoid them, or whatever the case may be. And you are able to step away from the table and go chill in another room, sit at a table, listen in, whatever it is that you need to do to take care of yourself in that moment. And when we get to a good stopping point, we'll pause. And then if you haven't come back to the table yet, we can then make that our stopping point where this game master can check in.
And I've seen people have different colors, like stoplight colors, stop for red, you know, pause is yellow, and green is like, you guys can keep going, but I'm going to stay out kind of a thing.
Yep.
But I would make sure people know that this is, you want to take this seriously.
Yes. It's a serious tool.
It's not a joke. You don't want to be like, oh, well, I don't want to have to negotiate with this shopkeeper who I'm trying to trick. So X card.
Yes.
You know, this is like a pause, a seriousness. You want people to feel safe to use this tool when they need it, because if they get to the point that they need it, joking, it's like the boy who cried wolf, like joking about it too much can make it not real.
Yeah. And it can sort of disempower people from using it for the reasons they actually want to use it. Remember that the purpose of safety tools is to help encourage the safety of the group and the willingness for people to speak up or set the boundaries that they need to have for themselves. So while there are a ton of different ways to do the X card, and I totally encourage you to find the one that you feel is most comfortable, or you feel provides the best opportunities for the group, what you're really thinking about is, how do I allow my players to speak up when they feel overwhelmed or when we're breaching onto a topic that they may not have considered in their no list or their please list that they need to set a boundary for and say, this is becoming too much for me. And one of the important parts about something like an X card is, as opposed to like the no list, is that it may not be a specific topic. It could just be that I had a hard day at work and I'm realizing that like this is a really emotional scene that we're doing. And normally I would be perfectly fine playing this kind of emotional scene, but my day at work was just just too much for me, and I just don't have the energy for it today. It's also about setting those boundaries for the moment, for the feelings you may have in a specific time.
It could be, I just found out a friend of mine has cancer, and we're role-playing a scene out with someone who is terminally ill, and I didn't realize until right now that it's affecting me.
Right, exactly. So a part of it is also keeping in mind that, like, things may come up that we didn't get a chance to define the boundaries for in earlier discussion. And in fact, they may be things, no matter how good a friend I may be with this person and how well I may know them and how much I hang out with them and chat with them in other parts of my life, I may not know those specific details of their life and that moment that becomes overwhelming for them. And I want this to be a fun experience. I want this to be engaging and interesting for them, not overwhelming and terrible. Mm-hmm. So a part of this is just about providing the tools. That's the X card.
Yes. What's Fade to Black?
Fade to Black. This is one of my favorite tools as a game master, which is just we've reached a moment that I don't want to describe. And I then say we fade to black and we move on. Exactly. It's a fade to black in a TV show and a movie.
In the theater.
Excuse me,
which it came first.
Fair. So it's a moment where, like, you lean in and you're like, we're going to get this information from you and we're going to hurt you any way we can to get it. Fade to black. You come back up. You've got the information that you were looking for. We don't need to describe the torture scene. A torture existed. You can you can play around with the
so-and-so is laying on the floor.
Right. You can play around with the moral implications of what that means for your character, all of that stuff still. So we didn't completely avoid the topic, but we definitely didn't role play it out. Fade to Black is a great tool I use a lot as a game master, and it's a great tool to empower players to be able to do, to say, I would like to fade to black. I don't want to play out this scene. This is making me uncomfortable, but I don't want to completely stop the game, and I don't need this thing to not exist in our world. I just want to skip ahead to the next bit.
Yeah, let's rather end than this roleplay. Scene and right. move on.
I'm flirting with the barmaid, and we're gonna. I say, hey, you want to come back up to my room? And then somebody else goes, fade to black, and we go, great. You go up to the room. Fade to black. Well, you'll wake up next to the barmaid. That'll be the whole thing. We're not going to describe any more of that.
Or you wake up next to no one.
Yeah. Oh, ooh, interesting. But either way, like we don't need to go into the details. And I'm also okay with that's fine that happened. I just don't want the details of it to be expressly said within our game.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it lends itself towards other colorful fades. You know, anytime you're talking in the past, it's all sepia tones.
Oh, it's true.
Because the past is sepia tone.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Okay, those are the safety tools that I like the most. There are so many other great safety tools. I totally encourage people to go out looking for them. I will at times incorporate other safety tools in. Those are just the ones that I almost always know that I want to incorporate into the game and use and have everybody be aware of. But there are totally times where I'll bring in another safety tool and I'll go, hey, this is a great and important safety tool to use. I lost track of our.
That was where we were at. We set aside character creation and we set aside map building.
Okay.
Which we don't have time to talk about.
Oh no, a diet toothpaste. You have maybe intentionally or unintentionally asked a question that's so complex that it may actually require multiple.
Oh my gosh.
Multiple.
We might need
episodes.
A part two
of this.
Whoa. Okay. 104 P.
Character creation and world building being our remaining things. Oh no, I didn't talk about, because we talked about safety tools, but we didn't talk about table expectation. We covered safety tools. Table expectations is pretty straightforward. The importance of table expectations is just for you to specifically say, here is my expectations for you as a player. I expect you to show up on time. I expect you to have already eaten before you get here, or to already have your food ready to go so that we don't spend the first hour with you ordering Uber Eats once you arrive.
Or if you guys set up a rotating thing, you've already ordered the food for the night that you are going to make be the one to make the food.
Right. These are whatever your expectations are as a game master, and it's a chance for all the players to kind of jump in with what their expectations are. Some people have stuff like sensory things that they want to have at the table. I don't like when people stack dice because I get nervous that they're going to fall over and make a big noise. Whatever the case may be, and those things may not bother you, but providing the opportunity and the space for people to talk about those things, I think is very important.
We're okay with fidget toys. We're not okay with fidget toys.
Exactly. I'm okay with people drawing while they're at the table if it helps them pay attention, but I don't want them on their phones looking at stuff that's not related to the game. Being able to set down the table expectations for what do you expect your players, what rules do you expect your players to follow, not as characters, not as playing the game, but as just people who are sitting at a table and who are getting together maybe once a week or every other week to play a game. What are the meaningful pieces to that? If you're going to cancel and you're not going to make it, let me know, maybe not right when the game starts, I can plan for it.
Are we okay with alcohol? Are we not okay with alcohol? Are we okay with guests coming? Like if you can't find a babysitter,
right?
Can my 9-year-old join me today?
So just making a little bit of a space for you to do that, and a great way to do that as a game master is to start setting your own expectations and then ask your players whether or not they might have some expectations of the kind of, you know, showing up experience that they're about to have.
Absolutely. So
did we even get, we were supposed to have like another piece to this, but I think we ran out of time.
Technically, we're supposed to be doing our search the room.
Oh.
That we might have to do later.
Okay, I guess we'll have to leave that for next time. So there you go. Part one of our 2-part series of, Session Zero.
Session Zero.
Well, thanks so much for the question, Diet Toothpaste, and I guess I'll thank you again when we get into part two. So that's the end of part one, but we're coming into, we'll set up for part two, and glad to have you along for the journey.
You can reach us at nextsessionpodcast.com if you want to submit your own question that might be so big that we do 2 parts.
You can also find us on Facebook at The Next Session or on Instagram at Next Session Podcast.
So I'm Alyssa Johns.
And I'm Adam Johns. Tune in next time, and we'll help you prep for your next session.
Goodbye.